I hope you all enjoyed the break. I often look at the break as more important than this blah, 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 blah. Because this is the time you really come to know each other, you interact, you know, you interconnect, you introduce yourself, you exchange addresses, you make commitment to meet again, eat together. So I often think these breaks are more important than just talking and listening. Yeah. And sometimes you, even in Dharamsala, I found that some people have even found their husbands and wives in Dalai Lama's, during Dalai Lama's teaching. It happens. Yeah. They just had an eye contact and that's it. That was the beginning of all the love and compassion and suffering and everything. Yeah. One of the things I do is I connect. I'm a tour guide in India, especially tour guide for students from New Orleans, Tulane University, School of Social Work, because I'm also a social worker. So I'm invited every year, actually, but I go every second year to New Orleans, School of Social Work, in New Orleans, Tulane University, and I give talks on purely on social work, nothing else. Yeah. And so, but when they come to India, the dean, the professors, the students come, actually three different batches come. Then one of the things we do is we connect these students and professors with the Buddhist teachers, especially the hidden Buddhist teachers. So one of the greatest living masters is my own aunt, who's a nun, pure vegetarian for last 18 years, completely out of her compassion for animals. When she gives talks on compassion and loving kindness, it is not like this. She'll be spending at least 15 minutes crying. Crying and crying and crying, you know. Really, it's really powerful, that kind of a lecture. Crying lecture you get. And you wait and you feel sorry for her. When will she stop crying and she cry more? Anyway, the students get teachings from them as well as question answer. So one of the questions one of the girls, the young smart girl, asked my aunt when she described about three different kinds of sufferings, the all-pervading suffering, suffering of suffering, suffering of change. So somebody asked her, what is the meaning of all-pervading suffering? And she said, my aunt said, she smiled and she laughed and she said, and she told me, oh my God, they're asking some strange question. Anyway, she said, she told the students, right now you all are students, you are young, you're full of energy, you're all new to each other. So you are telling, looking at each other, ha ha, hee hee, hoo hoo, very happy, cheerful. Mm-hmm. And she said, soon you will come to know each other and better, mm-hmm. and each one of you will be telling each other the list of miseries and pain and suffering you are going through. And she said, that is the meaning of all-pervading suffering. Yeah. I really admire my aunt's teachings. Very simple answers, but all the teachings are within that. That it is my sincere wish to bring her to Australia, America, Germany, everywhere, but it might happen. So the next is what are the root emotions? The Buddha, historical Buddha, has classified, let's say, all the emotions into something like 84,000 different heaps of emotions. Actually, it's called Chöki Phungpo, 84,000 heaps of emotions. But now I think it has really increased. Maybe it has increased of a few million or billion. And that's quite obvious when you go to a supermarket, how many items are there to fulfill our desire, you know? It's more than 84,000, I'm sure. But the root cause of all these 84,000, therefore Buddha also taught, it was said that 84,000 different teachings are the remedies for these 84,000 emotions. And they are compiled into 100 volumes of Buddha's original teaching called the Kangyur or Buddhist canons. They are like this much thick and this much long. Yeah. And they're very simple. They are similar like what I told you before, the Ramjor, Buddha taught the disciple Ramjor, treat everybody equally like that. Then what happens is the great Indian master started writing commentaries on the Buddha's teaching, so it got a little bit more complicated. The commentaries are supposed to make it easy and clarify, but it's made more. Then the Tibetan master started writing commentaries on the commentaries, so now it's become very complicated. But if you read the original Buddha's teaching, they're very simple. They're just like talking. And you all must hear about the so-called the Heart Sutra. Have you heard of Satsa? The whole thing was taught by the Buddha. Actually, it is just, it was like a chat between Avalokiteshvara and Shariputra, you know. And Buddha just simply said, yes, yes, what Avalokiteshvara was absolutely right. You know, that's the only thing Buddha ever said in that text, actually. So it is very simple, actually. There's no need for commentaries and sub-commentaries to make it more complicated. So please try to read the original Buddha's teaching. They're very clear and ordinary language. Anyway, if you sum up this 84,000 emotion, it comes down to 6 root emotions. And the first is the ignorance. And here, the ignorance does not mean that you failed in an exam or something like that, or you're not aware of the latest news or something. It doesn't mean that. What it means is grasping onto this false self. The self, if you investigate thoroughly with an unbiased attitude, just see where is I, where is me, and you take off, for example, there's a classic exercise where you chop off your head in your mind, chop off your arms, put it separate, and then take apart and look apart, and molecules, atoms, you look, and at last, you will not find anything. And that is the what in Buddhism called the true self, the inherently non-existent self, the selfless self. Yeah. So, right now, at least I have failed to recognize that selfless self. Therefore, I believe that I exist. I'm concrete. I'm permanent. I'm great. I know more than you. You know, that kind of a idea crops up. We have all these concepts. And because of this thought, I, then the others exist. If there's no I, there can't be others yeah, as well. So that misconception about oneself and others is known as the ignorance in Buddhism. And out of this arises dacha. The Tibetan word for desire is 2 words actually. Desire, de is desire or wish, want. And chak means attached. So not only you wish, you desire something, but you get attached onto it. So that is desire attachment, the second root emotion. And the third is shedang, which means first you get angry at someone because that person did not agree with your philosophy or whatever, you know. In other words, that person is not thinking the way you are thinking, dressed up, not dressed up as the way you are dressed up, something like that. Some really stupid, silly reason often, actually. And because of that, we are not only angry at that person, but we also started hating that person or anything to do with that person, including that person's possessions. Even if you see that person's motorbike or bicycle, you get angry at the bicycle, you know. You start getting angry at that person's dog, that person's anything connected with that person. That person's friend also appears like your enemy. That is called anger and hatred, the third root emotion. And the fourth is the greed. Yeah. The more we have, the more we want. And there's no end for this wanting and wanting until someday we said, oh, that's enough. I was like that. I'm still like that at home, but when I travel, I have to travel very light, so my wants are minimum now because of the weight regulations they have on the airlines. It's very good to have these rules which, you know, ask you to give heavy fine. Then your wants are immediately limited somehow. So this greed, and greed here in Tibetan, really what it really means is that holding tight onto whatever you have and not sharing with others. It was said that during the historical Buddha's time, somebody asked the Buddha, what is the worst thing one can do? And Buddha thought and smiled, and he said, the worst thing is someone has got plenty of things, food, clothing, money, whatever, and not sharing with others. That is the worst thing in the world. So that's where the greed. And the fifth is, again, maybe the second root cause of all the other emotions. In your language, it will be ego or pride or narcissism or something. Yeah. But the Tibetan word for this is na-gel. Means I win. What means you lose? That means you lose, actually. Yeah. Or it can be translated as me victory. So these are the five root emotions which are responsible for all these pains, suffering, miseries, misunderstanding, not trusting each other, feeling insecure. All this comes out of these five root emotions. But now, the next question is how to transform these five root emotions, which are often termed, coined as in Tibetan, the five poisons. You know, how to, first let's say how to, there are two ways to deal with it. Either you get rid of them, or you transform them into something else. Yeah. So there are two ways. And the first, how to get rid of them, and that is by applying the antidotes. For example, what antidote would you apply for anger and hatred? Patience and love and compassion, all this. And for, say, pride? Humility, exactly, humility. And then what is the other one for jealousy? Rejoicing in others, you know, appreciation, rejoicing, expressing admiration over others, you know, have success, happiness, whatever. And then what is the desire attachment? Generosity. And for the greed? Also generosity, I think, greed, yeah. And for ignorance? Wisdom, yes, wisdom. So either you get rid of these four poisons through applying these different antidotes, and there are many different ways to do. I think one of the ways to do, I'm sure those who have attended His Holiness the Dalai Lama's teaching in Sydney got all the detailed antidotes. But now, the second way of dealing with this is how to transform these, what you call, the poisons into the best medicines. Recognizing that these poisons are the medicines, you know, the best medicines. So how to do that? And that is through a meditation where, for example, if you get angry, instead of focusing on the object or the person whom you're getting angry, just simply look at the nature of the anger and hatred itself and see where is this anger, where did it come from in the first place? Where does it abide in the middle? Where does it go at the end? Just look at it. Simply look at it. And then soon you will find that it has no origin, it is not staying anywhere, it is not going anywhere. Actually, you will realize that there's no such thing called anger at all at the first place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is what we call the emptiness nature of anger. And that is the true nature of the anger, that it doesn't exist at the first place. Yeah. And now how to remain non-distracted in that emptiness nature of the anger. And that emptiness nature, or the absence of the anger, is known as the wisdom-like mirror. If those who are familiar to different wisdoms, that is the wisdom of mirror. Mirror of wisdom or wisdom of mirror? Mirror-like wisdom, that's right. Mirror-like wisdom. What is mirror-like wisdom? Is the emptiness aspect of the anger and hatred. You get that? Yeah. And now the second, desire attachment. So when you get desire for something or you're getting attached, then again, instead of focusing on the object where you're getting desire for and getting attached, you just simply look at the desire attachment itself. What is the nature? Where did it come from? Where does it go? Where does it end? Has it got any shape? Has it got any colors? You know, like that, you keep on analyzing. And then soon you realize that there's no such thing called desire attachment, actually. It doesn't exist at all at the first place. And that absence of desire attachment realization, or the emptiness nature of the desire attachment, is called, what is the next, is discriminating wisdom or something like that, isn't it? What is that, Anila? Discriminating wisdom? Yeah. So that is the name of that wisdom. But whatever it may be, that is the emptiness nature of the desire attachment. So likewise with the jealousy. So again, look at the nature of the jealousy itself and see what it is, where it is. And then soon you realize there's no jealousy as such. And that absence or the emptiness nature of the jealousy is known as all-accomplishing wisdom. Then likewise, the ignorance, isn't it? You look at the ignorance, and there's no ignorance. And the no ignorance is called the chuying yishe, that is the dharma dadu, or the space-like wisdom. And then what is the fifth one? Greed, yeah, you look at the greed. And then again you find there's no greed. So this is how you transform the different emotions into wisdoms, by simply focusing not on the object or the person whom you are having all these emotions, but simply look at the emotion themselves. What are their nature? And then you will realize that their nature is emptiness. It doesn't exist at the first place. So this is a very powerful way of transforming emotions into wisdoms. And with this connection, I would like to share with you a meditation which was taught by Pema Sambhava. And that meditation is, again, sit straight. And your gaze, instead of gazing down, which is often known as the Bodhisattva's gaze, where your eyes are either half closed or half opened, you just simply gaze across the space, as if you are gazing between the point between the two eyebrows, just straight like this. And breathe gently, and slowly, slowly stop breathing. And when you stop breathing, when there's no movement of the air in and out, your eyeballs will also stop moving, and your mind will also stop moving, actually, and just straightway you look right there in front of you. While sitting like this, let us not invite new thoughts, nor go after the previous thoughts, but simply remain in this very, very moment, which is fresh, fresh and natural, unfabricated, uncontrived. Just simply abide in this freshness of nowness. And if any emotions arises, then let them mind their own business, and we mind our own business. And if good positive thoughts, if good thoughts arises, let it arise, but not grasping onto them. If negative thoughts arises, let them arise again, but not grasping onto them. Let them do whatever they want. And while we just simply remain in the freshness of nowness. So in this nowness, in this experience of utterly empty yet fully awake state of mind, in this kind of a mind state, what happens is the person who is feeling angry, the object to whom you feel angry at, the anger itself, all these three become one taste. You can't distinguish them. They become one in that state of mind. Likewise, if you desire for something, the person who is feeling that desire, the desire itself, the object to whom you feel desire at, they all become one and same taste. So this is what you experience. So now is the question answer time. Heaps, that's what how it translates. Chuiki Pungbo. Pungbo is aggregate or heaps. Yeah. Within those five, yeah. Five are like the root, and those are like branches, sub branches, flowers, seeds, you know, whatever. Yes, the five root emotions, like the big knots in the thread. Once you untie the big knots, the small knots just gets untied by themselves, you know, you don't need to put. But if you started untying the small knots, then that will take maybe 100 years, you know, if there's a big thread. So that's how it is. Yeah. Yes, please. One of the things that the great Indian master Shantideva has taught many, I think many, many different skills, but I can't remember any of them. But one thing Shantideva said, the least thing one can do when one is angry, for example, just if you're standing, just stand still and keep quiet. Yeah. If you're sitting, just sit quiet and don't move. Just wait. Yeah. And then it comes down by itself. Like the waves of the ocean, you know. It calms, but it just goes back, isn't it? There's no one pushing the waves. You say you go back, you know. It's like that, the emotions. They come back. But if you just wait, it just subsides back into the ocean. So that's the least thing one can do. Yeah. Just keep quiet. Just stand still and don't move. Yeah. And if you feel regret, just say, I'm sorry. I did such and such. It doesn't matter. You're not losing anything. Nor that person is gaining anything in reality. It's just a little bit of, you know, ego trip, I guess. Yeah. It's just sacrificing your own ego trip. And this will give you satisfaction. You know, that's how you transform your enemies into friends. You know, just giving up your own ego, or be humble. Yeah. In fact, we say only when the person is humble, then you become the perfect vessel for receiving knowledge. Otherwise, if you are not humble, we'll always think, oh, I know all, I know better. And we are not. We're not, doesn't become suitable vessel for receiving knowledge. I think it also depends much on your intention and your motivation. Yeah. For children, often you may have to spank because your wish is really for a child to become a good child. What does good child mean? So that the children can exist in the society, isn't it? If you live all alone in the mountain, you don't need all these rules, regulations. No, that would be really silly because they're really baby, they won't understand such things, you know. So we shouldn't, I think, teach these big things to the children, you know. Let them just play and, you know, whatever. Let them grow until, I think, the legal age is 18, yeah. And then let them go out and decide, yeah. I think until then, I think we are responsible for our children, so we can't apply, I think, these high principles to little kids and babies. I think they're very pure, isn't it? Kids are very pure. I'm sure we all are like that when we were born. We didn't know our country. We didn't know our religion. We didn't know, you know, our language. We're just like, we were born as a Buddha, actually. Yeah. And somewhere we got kind of contaminated. Now we have to, you know, it's 9:30 and instead of sleeping and enjoying TV, we are here trying to become Buddha again, you know. Yeah. Do you have children? Yeah. Children are really beautiful. Yeah. In fact, we say children especially from newborn to until they are 3 or 5, they have even clairvoyant powers about their previous life and things like that. So even in Tibetan, if there are boys, unfortunately, we watch them really carefully. They might say, oh, I was such and such lama, my gomba was there, you know. And actually, that's how the fourth Karmapa was found. He said, I am the Karmapa, my gomba is there, you know. And my own lama told me that when he visited America, one of his cousin's daughter or something, and little girl told the lama, can't you recognize? I'm your aunt, you know, such and such. When the lama came from America, he said, oh, I found my aunt in America, a little girl. So children are like that, their mind. Since they do not have these conditions, and not yet, it's very pure, and they can see far more than what we can see. Yeah, they're very pure. Yeah, it's just we who make them impure, in other words. It's sorry to say, that's what it is in reality. Yeah. Same thing with, I think, animals. I think they're very pure animals. Really, they don't know their country, you know. They have no religion. Yeah. Really great, I think. They're free, in a way. Yes, please. Tomorrow I will give you the empowerment of a triple wrathful deity called Garuda, Vajrapani, and Hayagriva. Garuda, those who are used to Tibetan Buddhism or Vajrayana Buddhism, the Garuda is the wrathful emanation of Manjushri, and Hayagriva is the wrathful emanation of Avalokiteshvara, Buddha of Compassion. And the Vajrapani is the Vajrapani, the essence of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, strength or the power or the energy. And the Manjushri personifies the wisdom aspect of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And Avalokiteshvara or Chenrezig personifies the compassionate aspect or the essence of the compassion of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And Vajrapani, as I mentioned you before, power and energy. So we need wisdom first, then we need compassion, then we need power. And we first need wisdom and knowledge, otherwise we wouldn't know what to do, isn't it? That's why we go to school, college, all these things, to acquire the knowledge. But then, if we don't have compassion, then there is a great risk or danger that we might misuse our knowledge to destroy others, to destroy ourselves, just like all these big countries, you know, these nuclear weapons, and they think that they're going to destroy that country, but I think it destroys everyone. As the Dalai Lama says, these days, in these modern wars, everybody is loser. There's no such thing called winner. It's very clear, actually. That's because they have the knowledge, but no compassion. That's where things are going wrong. But having wisdom and compassion is not enough. These are just like what we say in India, just don't pay only lip services, you know. They're just lip services. We have to put them into action so that it actually does something. Yeah. And for that, we need strength, we need energy, we need power. So these three Buddhas personifies wisdom, compassion, and energy. And tomorrow, three wrathful deities are the wrathful forms of these three. And it is especially good for those who are suffering from sicknesses. In Tibetan medicine, all the sicknesses are generally classified under two categories. Either it is hot-related or cold-related. So the cold-related sicknesses are like arthritis, kidney pain, you know, anything, a urinary tract infection or something like that. So it's especially good for healing the cold related, as well as those who have skin problems, boils and work itchy and you know, hair falling and that kind of a thing. It's a very good empowerment, the tomorrow's empowerment. I think it is combination of all, yeah. Because there's a self-generation, there's a front generation, but you can visualize yourself as a deity only after receiving the empowerment. Then there's a time when you merge your lamas in the form of these deities with your mind. So your lama's mind, the deity's mind, your mind becomes one taste and inseparable from each other. So that is actually Dzogchen. So it's a combination of all. Yeah. And then we will also do the practice, of course, and we got the English translated practice with all the pictures, photographs. And on Sunday will be transference of consciousness, where you shoot out, eject your consciousness in the form of tiny little ball through this channel and merge either into space or into the Buddha Amitabha's heart or the Thor. So that's what it is, especially it's beneficial at the time of death. And then the afternoon is the chit practice. This is chit, which literally means cut or chop. What you cut or chop is the ego clinging concept. You chop that through this practice. So it is chanting, a little bit of using drum and trumpets and bell and visualization. And again, therefore, those who wants to practice chit must practice first the power. The chit simply means is you're shooting out. One minute you're shooting out your consciousness, next minute you're bringing it down. It's like playing with your consciousness. So there's a risk that it may shorten your life. Yeah. And in order to compensate the loss, then we have a little bit of Buddha Amitayu's mantra and visualization practice at the end. It's the compensation. Yeah. So that's what is generally what we'll do. So the whole trick with the emotions is let them be their own place. Let them do whatever they want to do, you know. Don't follow them or grasp onto them or attach onto them or don't pay any attention. In other words, you know, just let them be as they are. Yeah, that is the crucial point. Then what happens is they just simply disappears and they leave you. And they just like the waves from the ocean. You know, they just go back into the ocean. Yeah, no matter how big or small they may be. Yeah. Like that. It just subsides. Only things we got to wait. Yeah. Just like in India we are used to waiting. Sometimes the trains are as late as 8 hours, 7 hours, 9 hours. So you just wait. Yeah. Nothing can be done really. Yeah. At least nowadays we got this mobile phone and you can inform, you know, we are late. But in those days even nobody knows you are late. Who cares? Yeah. You just wait. You are not required. So if you just let it be as they are, they just take care of themselves. And you naturally take care of yourself. Yeah. That is the most crucial point, and that is the most supreme meditation out of all other meditations. And that kind of a meditation, it is beyond labels, beyond names, beyond religion, beyond direction. You are free from everything. Yeah. So anyone can practice that. Even those who do not believe in any religion can practice that. Yeah, because they have a mind, you know, after all, and they also have all the root emotions. Yeah. This is known as the Dzogchen, and usually in Tibetan society, such teachings are given only after doing a set of 100,000 prostrations, 100,000 this, 100,000 that, 100,000 this, 1.3 million of this mantra. So this is a very precious and rare kind of a teaching that I shared with you today, the Tibetan secrets. And that is the most important thing. So simply sit straight and look at it. And once you get used to that, once you recognize the mind as it is, the natural mind, without fabrication, then there's no need for a special room, special time, special people, since your mind is with you all the time. You can be just aware of that. You may be talking with someone special, but still part of your mind is aware of this innate quality we have. Yeah. And that is what I meant by having inner confidence. Then you know who you are. After all, we are not that bad. So whether you are eating or in the toilet or walking or cutting grass or watching a movie, you can be always aware of your innate goodness, your fundamental nature. Yeah. That is, I think, the best services we can provide to others. Help others to see their innate goodness, their fundamental nature, you know, their primordial goodness, which nobody made it, no Buddhas made it. It has been there naturally, you know. No one can take it away, you know. So once you recognize that, then you become fearless. You become courageous, you know. And of course, naturally, you will become compassionate. Yeah. And at the end, who benefits most is you yourself. Yeah. Because then we don't have this such thing called feeling guilty of something, you know. Because you're 100% sure about who you are. Susan? I think it is an emotion, yeah. In fact, why there's love, I feel, is because of the kindness of anger and hatred. If there's no anger and hatred, there can't be love and compassion. These are always there somehow in the law of nature. There's always this opposing force. If there's no anger and hatred, there can't be love and compassion. Also, I think it is quite natural that these two forces are there somehow. Yeah. So often I say, because of the kindness of the anger and hatred, the love exists. Yeah. It sounds quite funny, but that's how it is probably. Yeah. So it also has some good quality. Yeah. That's what I meant. After all, we are not that bad. Yeah.
Yes, please. Is it then theoretically possible to have a world without?
I think it is possible. Yeah, once you see this innate quality. Yeah, once you see this innate, like the natural quality, you know, then I think it is possible. Not only will be free from anger and hatred, we'll be free from love as well. Because both anger and hatred and love will become one, you see, in that state of mind. There's no such thing called samsara to be feared about and nirvana to be achieved. They're just one, actually. They become one taste. Yeah.
And they transform into something else that we can call
itself. Oh, we can't call anything. It is... We say often we compare to this kind of experience, but you will experience one taste of samsara and nirvana. And for Buddhist, samsara is the ultimate fear, and nirvana is the ultimate hope. Yeah. So this ultimate hope and ultimate fear becomes one taste. And when you taste that flavor, we compare this to something like a mute person tasting a delicious chocolate for the first time. That person can taste, it's so delicious, yet can't express it. That kind of a feeling, yeah. But you can call anything you like, doesn't matter. Yeah. That's where we get deceived. We give names to something and we think that exists in that form, like say spoon. Although tomorrow, maybe today, we all can get together and say, let's call this spoon, and the spoon as a plate, you know. So we are basically deceived by the names that we attach to these different forms or colors. Yes, we are trying to achieve, although there's nothing to be achieved. We have already achieved that already. It's already come. Often I say that when one of my lamas always give the example of waxing and waning moon. Sometimes waxing is increasing, waxing, and then becomes full, then it becomes waning, and then there's no moon. But in reality, the moon is neither waxing, no winning. It's the way our perception, the way we see it, isn't it? Likewise, our innate goodness, our fundamental quality is like the full moon. It's never decreasing or increasing. Yeah. But we simply do not recognize that because of all this, I guess, the conditions and the defilements, the contamination that we get as we grow up. Yeah. This is my country, you know, this is my religion, this is yours, you know, all about that. All right, that's it. I think probably we all need sleep, rest. And then let's see, I'll just sum it up. Let's see what I got it here. So at the end, as the Dalai Lama says, therefore, love and compassion in our life are like the very life force. The love and compassion are like our life force, you know. So please remember that these two are the life force of human beings, of animals, of birds, of the nature, even the sun. Just imagine if the sun is a little bit farther away, we would die from cold, isn't it? If it's a little closer, we would die, we would get burned. So, but it is located in such a way, so there must be a such thing called universal love or compassion, isn't it? That the life exists and we enjoy the sun. We don't complain about the sun. Yeah. Although Tibetans say, oh, the winter sun is not that hot. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for coming. Yeah. Good night. Yeah.